Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galati along with Chris Buchanani. Chris, I really do not understand this. You were concerned about this game. You were concerned about going up to play Minnesota. You were concerned. Come on, my friend. They had it the whole way.
Honest to God, what a complete idiot. Just goes to show how full of it I am, Jim.
You know, you think you know more than the prognosticators. You think you know better than the guy setting the point spread. You think you know better. And there you have it. A Penn State rout over the Golden Gophers, 26-25, Chris.
Sure. And the sad part is I'll never learn.
Well, let's start with this. What made you so concerned going in? And, you know, in all sincerity, obviously those concerns were came to fruition.
Sure. Well, it's a matrix of factors, some of which are vibes based, some are more grounded in quantifiable reality. Let's start with the vibes. Look, Jim, you've been a fan a long time, just like I have. We know there's some bad juju around the Minnesota Golden Gophers and special Penn State football seasons, or seasons that look like they're going to be special until we play Minnesota, specifically 1999 and 2019. And that 2019 game, you circle especially because that was a season in which James Franklin took Penn State to Minnesota to play what, granted, was probably the best team they've had there in the last 25 years or so, but was still, I think, decidedly inferior to the squad Penn State had that season, and they lost. So a lot of the factors were very similar. You had a playoff berth on the line. You had James Franklin versus PJ Fleck. You had the Nittany Lions going to Minnesota. That all puts your antennae up a little bit, right? And then there's just the fact that over the course of the decade he's been in Happy Valley, though not the last few seasons, James does have that tendency that he showed to lose a game like that 2019 Minnesota game, a game in which you're favored, a game in which you are the more talented team, and you just don't get it done. So that's the vibes-based stuff. But then, and also just as we saw this weekend, the old Lou Holtz line about you're coaching 18 to 22-year-olds and you're coaching a different team every week. Crazy stuff can happen in college football, especially when you go on the road. And when we go to something more quantifiable, I thought it was clear. I got to give PJ Fleck a lot of credit. Not my favorite guy in the world. He's done a really good coaching job with Minnesota this year. He's gotten them to play better than I thought he would. And they're perhaps even a bit better than their record indicates, to be honest. And they're physical, and they just looked like the type of team that in a cold weather road game with the end of the road so close, the goal so close, they could catch Penn State off guard. And so all of those factors combined had me on the edge of my seat all week.
And had you on the edge of your seat the whole game, I'm sure, also. Well, and it starts. Let's start with the road issue, which earlier in the year, the narrative in the Big Ten was, you know, traveling to time zones, that kind of thing. But going on the road was an issue. And I didn't realize this, but, and we'll talk more about the national picture. Alabama now 3 losses. All 3 are on the road, Chris. Is this just the nature anymore of college football that going on the road, we saw Oregon struggled mightily at Wisconsin. Ohio State, their one loss on the road at Oregon. We seem to be seeing it over and over again, hitting the road. Why is that so difficult for these college teams?
Who knows? I would love to see a study that looks into maybe less about the disadvantages of going on the road, but what actually goes into constituting home field advantage, especially in college football. I'm sure some of it is just the ability to stay in a routine and not have to experience the additional stresses that come with travel. But there's just a comfort of familiarity. And I do think probably a psychological edge of being able to play in these environments where you just have a lot of human energy that is being directed towards supporting your efforts and stymieing those of the opponents. I mean, that's the best I got off the top of my head. But look, if I gave you a choice of where Penn State could play a critical football game anywhere else in the country or Beaver Stadium, I couldn't get the question out of my mouth before you answered. I wanted in-state college. And college football, I think, with maybe a few exceptions in the NFL, is the sport where venue and the advantage that it gives you because of the atmosphere, fear, and the environment is the plays the biggest role, is what I'm trying to say, if you follow.
I do. And I think you have, as you mentioned earlier, you have very young people, 18 to 22-year-olds, where emotion is part of it, the emotion of playing in front of the home crowd with that support. I think, you know, we've seen it at Beaver Stadium where the challenge of just calling your signals is difficult because of the home crowd noise. That's part of the equation. And, I've seen studies, and I'm not even sure which sport it is, where the officials are even affected by it. You know, on a 50-50 call, it's a little easier to be to make it the call go towards the home crowd. I mean, when there's a pass interference.
Unless you're playing Ohio State at home.
Unless you're playing Ohio State at home. Yes, I think there's a special category for Big Ten officials, Chris.
Correct. Yeah. Although that's right. I mean, we're going back some years now, but I think it was the authors of Freakonomics published a study about that that indicated that unconsciously officials are biased, they're motivated and influenced by a home crowd.
Yeah, I think it is the case. And the example I was giving it, you see a play, I've always been amazed at how quickly a crowd can react to a play on the field. So if there's an incompletion, if there's contact, it's amazing how quickly the home crowd will react, you know, as if it's pass interference. I think even in time to influence the official. Oh, yeah, I see it, and throw the flag. So I think there's even, yes, an advantage that way because of the officials. But at the end of the day, so many teams have been affected by playing on the road. And you see with Penn State, down a couple touchdowns at USC, down double digits against Minnesota here, that it is the case. So is this glass half full, glass half empty with Penn State having the ability to come back in those situations?
Half full. Absolutely. You're going to face adversity when you have a special season. At various points, it is just going to happen. It happens to every college football team. And if you can name me one where it didn't happen, that they had a special season or a championship season and they didn't face any adversity the entire time, I'll just show you the exception that proves a rule. So, yeah, I don't look at it as half empty at all. In general, if you've been watching the sport for any period of time, you should understand the lesson of survive in advance, but you don't even need to have watched the sport for a long time. You need to have watched it on Saturday, and that lesson was crystal clear.
It really was. And part of this, Chris, is previously with the 4-team playoff, there were superior teams. There were a couple teams, at least Georgia or Alabama or both, were teams head and shoulders above the rest of the country. Maybe Absolutely. Ohio State was in that conversation where so superior was their talent that they could probably go on the road and not be an issue. This year, I would argue there are no really, really good teams in college football.
Yeah, everyone has a flaw. at least one flaw or weak point is probably the right way to put it. And it is interesting, man. I do wonder, and this probably is going to require a little more study and maybe a little bit more time to be able to analyze how it all shook out, whether or not we are really at this moment in the midst of college football's parity era as a result of a few years of NIL plus the transfer portal, and if that's what's affecting it.
I don't know. You're right. It's going to take a couple years to figure that out. But looking just at this year, maybe this year is an outlier. Right. And I've asked this question before to our buddy Ironhead. I'll ask you this question. Who are the four best teams in the country? Not the four most deserving, but who are the four best teams in the country?
The best, most talented teams, like just quality. Oregon and Ohio State are on that list. Are we agreed on that?
Agreed.
Yeah, okay. Man, Texas is number three. I don't know that I'm putting Texas in that group. Certainly, maybe. If you look at them on paper, they look great in the eye test, but they've not really faced a lot of adversity. The question is, who would you put in above there? I don't know if I'm ready to put Penn State in that top four or not. But if you're trying to make the point that it's those two teams you feel confident about and then an on-deck circle with 8 to 10 applicants, you've convinced me.
Okay. Yes. That was the point of the question. And I have to, you know, probably dig deeper into it. But Oregon barely escaped Boise State at home. Oregon barely escaped Ohio State.
Idaho. Don't forget Idaho. We were getting raked over the coals by Booger McFarland because we were up 27-3 with 16 seconds left to go in the UCLA game. And I'm like, no one's going to mention the fact that Idaho almost took it to Oregon in the first game of the season. Like, if we're getting slammed for sleepwalking through beating the brakes off UCLA in September, no one's going to say a word about the Idaho Vandals taking it to Oregon. I mean, come on.
See, that's my point, Chris. And remember, they went to the limit. They were down a touchdown in the fourth quarter at Wisconsin, which is partially the road discussion, but it's also I'm just not sure how really good Oregon is. I think they deserve the number one ranking, Chris, but I don't really know for sure that I have them with Ohio State, you know, as the two best teams in the country. I'm really not sure of that. We're going to have to pick it up from there, Chris. That's it for quarter number one. Stick around. Lots more to go. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We were talking Penn State football and their place in the national picture.
Hey, Jim, just real quick, to put a button on something we were talking about right before the break, talking about Oregon and how good are they and whatever. They're in almost all likelihood now, may even be locked in. I'm not positive as we record here. They're going to play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. If you delay money on just one team to win that game straight up, where would you put your money?
Ohio State.
Correct. Yeah, me too. And I think the vast majority of people would.
And that's kind of the direction I was headed, is that I do think Ohio State is the best team, but I don't think Ohio State is a great team. They don't have the great quarterback. Even their game against Indiana, which they eventually pulled away, and they pulled away. They were the much better team. But Indiana did their part in helping out Ohio State in that game.
Yes. Although going back to joking about Booger McFarland, they did score that totally meaningless garbage time touchdown, which now I said, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, but Booger McFarland now thinks that was a competitive four quarter game.
I thought when everyone was giving the running back credit for going down at the 1 yard line after the long run, you're talking about just putting the game totally away by scoring the touchdown.
Well, don't forget, Jim, he probably earned Ohio State some extra money, because all the Big Ten members get a little slice of that playoff revenue, and with all the upsets that happened in the SEC, probably helped keep IU inside the tournament. So he's just trying to help out his athletic director.
Well, we're going to get into the playoff picture in a little bit. Let's take a look at – let's revisit the game that Penn State survived. Couple different things. Early on, Chris, you were in quarter number one giving some credit to P.J. Fleck. I think that's very, very valid, because early on we saw it. The one thing we could count on, those short yardage situations, give Tyler Warren the ball in the Wildcat. He was 0 for 2 on it. To me, this was Penn State was well scouted, and Minnesota said, we're not going to let him run the ball. I doubt on third and one he's going to be looking to pass the ball or give it off. We've been seeing – I think that was credit to P.J. Fleck. They were ready for Penn State's short yardage situation.
Yeah, and they have good defensive linemen there at Minnesota. And going back to a conversation we've been having on and off since the preseason, Minnesota is a great example of the difference between the Pac-12 and the Big Ten for these new teams that came in. You have just got tough guys that are going to beat you up on both sides of the line of scrimmage for four quarters, and they may not have the skill position talent that's going to allow them to consistently be in the 9-10 win range for their season record, but you're going to be black and blue at the end of the game. And I understand these are all like cliches about the conference, but I really feel like we've seen it played out and validated this season. And I think a lot of those situations you're talking about, Jim, you could just see it in the body language. You could see it in the eyes of those guys when they go to the close-ups. They wanted that really badly. That was want to, a lot of those plays, and I give them a ton of credit.
And they won the line of scrimmage. They were winning the line of scrimmage that first half. There was no doubt about it on both sides of the ball, Chris, which, as you pointed out, that's won it. And again, I'll give P.J. Fleck credit for that. He had his team ready. Penn State, on the other hand, this looked like the team early in the year where they start slow, struggle in those short yardage situations. Hey, Chris, the first two possessions were stopped in those short yardage situations. And my feeling is there should be no excuse for that. And that led to what? 1 for 10 on third downs in this game?
Yeah, terrible. And really, Jim, going back to those early drives, the worst news for Penn State to come out of this game, and to me it's mostly positive in a plethora of ways, is you lose Anthony Donka, and that looks to me like an injury you don't come back from this season, which is just, tragic for the kid. You hate to see him this late in the season in a special year like this not be able to be out on the field, but it's a big loss for Penn State, especially in the running game. Shouts to the T. Frank Carr for having caught that early and pointed it out for everybody, the difference between Penn State's run game productivity to the right side of the line when Anthony Donka's in there versus Nolan Rucci. So that's a big, big loss for Penn State.
It is. And another, there was another play when they showed the replay of it, when I'm not sure if there was a sack or just a hurry of the quarterback, where a Minnesota defender had a free run Adam, but what you had was not good communication between Rucci and the right guard, where, you know, two guys come, they didn't pick it up correctly, which left a free run in, which I'm not saying it definitely would not have happened with Donka in there, but you know how it works, the communication among offensive linemen, that guy who you play next to over and over again, that communication just works better.
I will say this, though. This is the beauty of being able to talk about these sort of problems after a win. I think the fact that they now have on tape some of those miscommunications against those looks Minnesota showed them, and the fact that they're going to be able to go over that all week and learn from it, and not just all week, you know, probably over the next 4 weeks, that's going to be beneficial for Nolan because he's going to be the guy going forward.
Yes, and that's going to be – he's going to get plenty of reps going forward, Chris. Now, also, they had decisions to make in those short yardage situations. Were you surprised – the first two possessions, Penn State had fourth and one, and both times elected to punt. Did either one of those calls surprise you?
Not really. I understand there were people who were upset about them, and, you know, I get that. I understand it. We were no great shakes in the short yardage situations on third down at that point, and especially that early in the game. Me personally, I do not like surrendering field position, given the way your defense is playing all season long. So, and as you know, I'm like a super conservative, like punt and play defense, Paterno era kind of mindset guy. But if you go for it and you don't get it, I always think about these things in terms of risk reward. It's so early in the game, and your defense has earned the confidence you're showing them by punting it and saying, hey, guys, we need you to make a stop and maybe set us up with favorable field position, not gamble that we're going to hand it on a platter over to the opponent early on in the game and put you behind the eight ball. I don't have a problem with it. I really don't.
I'm the opposite in my feeling. I kind of follow that analytics where you're concerned about field position. I'm concerned about possession of the ball.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a very, very finite number of possessions. I don't want to give those up.
Here's the thing. You're right. And I am generally an analytics guy, but in those situations, man, I just think about it. Like if I'm on defense, I'm telling the coach, go ahead and punt it. Let me go punch these guys in the mouth. We'll get the ball back for you, and we'll get it back for you in better field position than you would have had it anyway. Like, let us do our job.
I'm the one who feels that in that situation, I had no problem with the first one especially, okay? It's still so early in the game. It's your first possession. I don't like giving up that possession, but I feel like I'm the better team. I'm not going to give Minnesota and their crowd all the momentum. But I also feel like by the second one, Minnesota has kind of established they're going to stack the line against you on those short yardage situations. I would have tried something a little different. It's kind of like you and I are as Eagles fans, you know, the brotherly shove when it's, hey, you know, team starting to stack up against it and they end up going outside with the ball. You might break something big, even a safe pass. So especially on the second one where you were now at the 45-yard line, Minnesota already has momentum going. I would have liked to have seen Penn State say, we're going to steal that momentum back. We're going to maintain possession. So I would have liked to have seen them go for the second one. Am I upset about either call? No, I'm not. I understand the other side of it. It's not what I would have done, but I'm okay with it, Chris.
Yeah, and I do wonder whether a component of it isn't a coach's feel for the psychological state of their sideline. I thought Penn State looked a little tentative and unsure of themselves early on. And again, maybe at that point in the game, you just don't feel comfortable risking not just momentum, although I think that's a very good point, because as you and I have discussed before, momentum is real, and anybody who says it's not is either a liar or a fool. You don't want to risk momentum, but you also don't want to risk putting your team deeper into a funk on the turn of just a single play. So that's kind of where I was. I know there are a lot of people who felt differently about it, and I respect their viewpoint. This is just where I was at. I wasn't upset during the game, and now, of course, knowing the outcome, I'm not upset either. But we could always have these theoretical discussions about just in terms of that moment in the game, was it the right call to make? Like Steelers fans, you know, you can go back and forth on whether or not Tomlin accepts the penalty to make it 3rd and 7 versus 4th and 2. And even if it works out, you know, I would be somebody who says don't accept that penalty. I theoretically speaking, I am just completely fine with punt in those situations.
Again, I would have done something differently, but I'm not going to get terribly upset about it. What you also had before we get to the late game heroics was a situation with special teams just breaking down. I think the punt, it was simply Riley Thompson taking that extra step and hesitating, and the defender making a great play. The extra point in return, that was a breakdown.
So the best comment I had made to me about that was a friend of mine texted me the video while we were watching the game. And I think it was Caleb Artis, like just does not move. Like the ball is tapping. Yes. He's just still down in his 3-point stance. And he said, this is like when you're playing Madden and the server lags on your end. And so not all the players move. And it's hilarious. If you go back and watch a clip, it really does look like, you know, somebody unplugged them and forgot to plug them back in. And so I have no explanation for it.
Yeah, that type of thing happens, and you just, what just happened and why? Which circles all the way back to how we started this, Chris. 18 to 22-year-olds, week to week, you're just not sure what you're going to get, and that's sometimes the case. All right, that's it for quarter number two. When we come back, we're going to talk about that last drive. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State's tight win, exciting win over Minnesota, 26-25. And Chris, at the end of the game, Penn State up by a point. First of all, let me ask you about P.J. Fleck electing to go for the field goal when he was down 4 points with, I guess, 5.5 minutes to go. They were inside the 10, and he chose to kick the field goal to get within a point. Have any problem with that call?
I don't think so. With the amount of time left on the clock, I actually thought that was the more prudent thing, to put yourself in position to win the game with a field goal.
I agree. I thought that was it was the wise thing to do for them. And, you know, hey, just take the 3 points. I was just looking it up. They were on the 8-yard line when that happened. I would have been okay either way. If they had gone for it and failed, you've got Penn State pinned back inside their own 10.
Yeah.
A chance if your defense makes the stop, you get the ball back in good field position. You make the field goal as they did. You're within a point. I was okay with either way, either choice. So they choose to make the field goal. Now you're Penn State with the ball, have to go the length of the field. And, Chris, it comes down to 4th down. They, of course, I believe that's where Drew Aller scrambled to get it close.
Yeah.
And you have a 4th down. At that point, I will tell you, I'm watching the game by myself. First thing I said was, fake punt. This is the time to do it. Again, Chris, I feel like if you could convert here, you're playing to win the game. Punting, you're playing not to lose. So I was thrilled with the fake punt. As that setup is happening, they're lining up for the punt. What are you saying to yourself about a fake punt?
I will tell you exactly what was happening. So I'm watching the game at the We Are In, okay? And Penn State is lining up to punt, and I'm talking to the owner out there, Pat Romano, and I'm talking to Pat and saying, Pat, what we've got three timeouts. What we should be doing here is lining up just to try to draw them off sides with no intention of snapping the ball. And as he and I were talking back and forth about that, Penn State runs the fake punt and gets the first down. And I think he said it exactly right. And PJ Fleck even sort of alluded to this in his post-game press conference. He said, you know what just happened? Minnesota's sideline was doing the exact same thing that just happened here. Their heads were on a swivel. They were BSing back and forth about what might be going on. And as they were doing that, Penn State picks up the first down with that brilliant, fake punt call.
And apparently, based on the post-game conversation, Chris, this is something that it's not they call it or not. They say, okay, you could do it if the defense is susceptible to it, depending on how the defense lines up, which is essentially saying, all right, if the defense is lined up in a safe defense, meaning they're looking for you possibly to go for it, you punt. If they're in their normal punt return setup, you fake it. So, yeah, Minnesota apparently was not – they weren't looking for it, which is kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a little confusion on their sideline. And again, PJ kind of alluded to that. I mean, you're never going to get up in your post-game press conference and admit like, oh, yeah, you know, we didn't really know what was going on. But I think there might have been a little bit of that happening. And you do have to ask yourself, putting yourself in Minnesota's shoes, to your point, as much as that does feel like a dangerous position for a fake punt, you also have to be thinking, man, are they really going to try this on their own 34-yard line? And credit to Penn State, they executed that so crisply and quickly, they didn't allow for the time for there to be a lot of conversation.
No, they didn't. They executed it great. But let me ask you about the call itself from James Franklin. We all know if that call would have failed, James Franklin would have been crucified by the fans, the local media, the national media. He would have been crushed for it. Doesn't he deserve some credit for having the guts? I'll use the word guts to make that call.
100%. Sometimes, Jim, you don't want to have a long, protracted, multi-day, hour, week, month affair. You want to say, just look, give me one shot, and I'm either going to get there or I'm not. And I think that was that play distilled and the call distilled what that game was for James Franklin. I think,
yes.
I truly believe that game was you find a way anyway. Doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be more than 1 point. And here we are talking about a 1 point win, but you find a way to win that game. You stay here for as many decades as you care to coach. If you lose that game, that's when you start having a serious conversation about, has this run its course for both parties? I think that was the stakes.
Yes, it definitely was, which means all the more credit I think he deserves for it. And Chris, my main complaint with the Ohio State game is I felt he was calling that game tentatively. He was calling it scared. He was calling it conservative. He was calling it to not lose as opposed to going out and taking the game. And later on in that same drive, twice they chose to go for it on fourth down. One, and it couldn't have been more polar opposite decisions. Put Drew Aller under center, quarterback sneak, got the first down. And then the final one, they called the pass play. Chris, I was thrilled with the call. Even though Nick Singleton was where the ball was supposed to go when he was covered, give great credit to Drew Aller for going to his secondary receiver, finding him. And I think Drew Aller's been underrated. I thought he played a wonderful game, even though there were some critics of him for this game. He completed 75% of his passes, but I digress there. Again, it was three fourth down conversions on that final drive, Chris.
Jim, in the preseason, you asked me how I thought Drew Aller was going to play this season. And the way I described my thinking on his play was that he would be good, but not finish the year mentioned among the great quarterbacks in program history. And I'm happy to report that I was wrong, because I think he is going to be in that mix. And that's because he's taken a year one to year two jump as a starter that was bigger than I think most people, and certainly myself, expected was going to be possible. So, yeah, let's start out by giving Drew the credit he has earned this season. I do like both the play calls. I think you can agree with me as a fellow Philadelphia Eagles fan. It's just wonderful to see that brotherly shove style formation figuring prominently in what will be a legendary win for this program. And yeah, I also love the pass play call there on fourth down. The reason why is because Minnesota was out of timeouts. And so given that field position and the amount of time left on the clock, you're more concerned with, let's get what we think is going to be the most advantageous play call to end this game, versus, you know, you're worrying too much about what happens if you don't get it. Just get the best play call in. So, yeah, I was totally comfortable with it, was not upset at all. And it is fitting to me that the game ended basically, number one, on Drew evading pressure in a way that was very reminiscent of what he did on fourth down against USC on the road earlier in the season, and that the catch was made by Tyler Warren, who also very wisely just went to the ground and did not, as they said on the For the Bloggy Game Balls video this week, pull a Devin Ford and try to get that into the end zone and leave Minnesota any breathing room at all. So yeah, just great. Encapsulates everything. That game encapsulated everything James Franklin has struggled with and been criticized for, including by me, in his entire Penn State tenure, in a game that I really thought was determinative over his future in Happy Valley. We should not take anything away with it and away from it, and we should pause for a couple of moments here early in this week and just appreciate the stakes and what was on the line and how it went. That's why you're a Penn State football fan. That's why this program has over 900 wins and is only one of seven programs in FBS to have that.
And I'm glad you brought up the USC game, because that was a game they had to put the ball in Drew Aller's hands. And guess what? He came through, Chris, multiple times, multiple drives, and they won the game. They had to put the ball in his hands in this game also, which leads to a question I've been asking for weeks, which is, why don't they do that more often, put the ball in his hands, Chris? Because time and again, we see it even when they're 2 minutes left in the first half. Hey, we can't have one of these 15-play, 8-minute drives. We need to march the ball down the field. Guess what? That's exactly what happens. You're down two touchdowns against USC. He marches you down the field. I think it's time to say this is Drew Aller's team, not Nick Singleton's team.
Yeah, I agree. I know you're not a dad, but did you have Dr. Seuss books as a kid or ever read Seuss? Okay. You know all the drawings of those like complicated like Rube Goldberg style yes. machinery they have in the Dr. Seuss books? That's how I imagine it looks on the inside of Andy Kotelnicki's brain. And so I think he just can't help himself, Jim. I think he has to sprinkle some of that into every game plan. But to your point, I think they're figuring out more and more each week. Like, hey, guys, we're one of the best quarterbacks, not just in the conference, in the country. We just got to run this thing straight and let him do his thing.
And part two of that is, it's Drew Aller to Tyler Warren, okay? Mm-hmm. If Drew Aller's 1A, Tyler Warren's 1B, that connection, that's, to me, the given that can open up the other things. You hit Tyler Warren enough, the running game will open up. You hit Tyler Warren enough, guess what? Another receiver will end up wide open. Oh, how about Omari Evans standing alone, you know, in the end zone? Another one of those kind of plays. I think you make defenses say, we got to stop Tyler Warren, and I think it'll open up the other things for you.
Yeah, if they put together a little highlight reel to send to the Heisman voters to have him in consideration, they need to show those plays on this crucial fourth quarter drive, because I know he's not going to have the scoring numbers from this game that you might want, like, oh, did he make the big play and score the game-winning touchdown? He made some of the most important plays of the entire season on that drive.
Exactly. And was that as quiet for him, a 100-yard game receiving, as you're going to see? Amazing, Chris. All right, that's it for quarter three. Quarter four, we're going to take a look at the national picture. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four. We're going to take a look at a crazy weekend in college football, Chris.
Jim, can I say one last thing about Tyler Warren before we do?
Yes, yes.
So with that 100-yard receiving game, he moved himself into sole possession for the career mark for Penn State for 100-yard receiving games. He tied Teddy Kwolek last week, and now he's number one with a bullet on that list. By hook or by crook, they got to find a way to throw him a touchdown pass against Maryland so he can also pass Pat Freiermuth and be in sole possession of the most receiving touchdowns for a Penn State tight end.
Do you know what? I am sure James Franklin knows that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I think it will happen.
Yep.
Chris. And you know what? I say that not in a derogatory way. I say that as, you go for it, James. Go do it. That, I think that's one of the things the players would like about him. All right, Chris. Do you remember a couple weeks ago, there were like 3 weeks left in the season, I told you, and I told the entire world, there were three games left in the national picture that counted. There were three games. That was it. That was it. I guess it was it Tennessee, Georgia, or then it was this weekend, Indiana, Ohio State, and next week, Texas, Texas A&M. That's all that mattered, Chris. That was it. Chris, I was wrong. I was very wrong, Chris. Number five, Indiana goes down. We sort of expected that. Alabama loses to Oklahoma, number seven, Alabama.
The
number
nine, SEC loss of the weekend for a terrible weekend for that conference. That Bama getting held out of the end zone and worked by Oklahoma, who is not good.
And that was the worst Oklahoma loss team.
Yeah.
Ole Miss loses at Florida, which, by the way, I bet Florida on that game, Chris. So I wish I would have bet the money line, but I took the points. Because
yeah, kind of like what you would maybe describe as the best of the losses. Like you talked about, you said that 3 weeks ago. That was really before Florida, which is all credit to Billy Napier.
My goodness, yes.
By the way, thanks so much for not for holding that job down so that we don't have to listen to James Franklin with Florida rumors for the next 4 weeks. Once DJ Lagway came in and really got his sea legs, that team has gotten better and better all season, really transformed with the way he's playing. Still not excusable for Ole Miss to lose the game, but definitely the best of the three terrible losses for the SEC this weekend.
And A&M losing to Auburn. Chris, did they just puncture that Southeast Conference, the Superior Conference, when they lose games like that to Auburn, Florida, and an awful Oklahoma team?
No, Jim, you just don't understand how good and how far ahead of the rest of the country the SEC is. It's just so deep. Our 4 and 5 teams are better than 90% of the rest of college football. This is just it just means more.
Well, I think it's going back to our earlier conversation. All those games were on the road. But if you're a 3-loss team, even in the vaunted Southeast Conference, are you out of the playoffs now?
Yes. Yes. Get out of here. You lost to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. I don't even want to hear about it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear one national talking head say a word about Alabama and the playoffs. I don't want to hear it.
I'm with you. They're out. They're out. You and you pointed out. Now, Georgia is
Oklahoma
the
only- stinks. Like for the past 2 weeks, what has everybody been saying? Texas doesn't have a marquee win. And when they're rooting around trying to find the best win for Texas, people didn't even mention Oklahoma. And you got worked. You got crushed. I saw on Twitter last night, Maine, the University of Maine, the Black Bears. Most people don't even know they have a football program. They got a touchdown against Oklahoma.
Well, I'm with you. They three losses, you should be out. That just killed their argument, which means we're down to three Southeast Conference teams making the playoffs, Chris.
Yeah, well, boohoo.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Now let me ask you, do you think that probably opens up a spot for the loser of the ACC title game at this point?
Yes. Or how about Clemson? How about Clemson not making the playoffs, but Clemson plays South Carolina, who very quietly has played very well in the Southeast Conference. A very good, they're also a three-loss team. There's no conversation about them making the playoffs. There's not. You know, though, if South Carolina takes it to Clemson, we're going to hear the Southeast Conference talk. But what if it goes the other way, Chris? What if it goes the other way with Clemson beating South Carolina? Might a two-loss Clemson be able to make it in?
That is an intriguing notion, but my sense is that when the rankings come out on Tuesday night, I think you're going to see a considerable amount of daylight between Miami and SMU and Clemson. And so I think that I think the committee will probably look very favorably at SMU's resume. They've been knocking on the door the last couple of weeks and they looked strong this past week. Miami had a convincing win. I think the ACC improbably may now end up getting two teams in. By the way, I said at the top of the show that I couldn't remember what the scenarios were around the Big Ten championship game. I guess it is still possible that if Michigan beats Ohio State, which for the record, I don't think they're going to, but if they would, Penn State could still get in, I guess, because we would have a tiebreaker against Indiana.
Do you want that to happen?
Not really, to be honest with you, Jim. I mean, I haven't fully thought through what would happen if Penn State lost, but I don't know. Look, I'm going to put all cards on the table. I got to be honest with the audience. Number one, I am one of many local business owners here in State College who's going to make some money if Penn State gets a home playoff game. So I do absolutely have a vested interest in it. But just beyond that, I am so excited about just being in the town and being in the stadium, getting the experience of a home playoff game. I'm so attached to it. I don't want to give it up.
Well, let me
that crazy scenario plays out. What a definition of a good problem to have, right? You know.
Wouldn't they still get a home game if they lost to Oregon in the conference championship?
I think you're right. I think they probably would. So yeah, it'd be nice, but at this point I'm just focused on beat the Terrapins and have a playoff game in Beaver Stadium.
I am too. I don't, you know, I'm not sure I fall into the, it's an extra game that have to play as opposed to resting up and all. But I guess my focus has always been on the playoffs, not the Big Ten championship game. And this goes back to my long history with this team from when they were an independent and first went into the Big Ten. And the Big Ten people, why would you want the national championship when you could go to the Rose Bowl? You know, that kind of thinking is still bothers me. Okay. So I worry about the national championship, but I think it would be if SMU plays Miami in the ACC championship game. And by the way, Miami's got to play Syracuse. Okay. This season, doesn't it just scream Kyle McCord having a crazy game and helping beat Miami?
I mean, crazier things have happened for sure. I just think it's wild that here we are in the last week of the regular season, and newcomers to all four of the Power Four conferences not only could win their respective championships, I think in most cases they'll be considered favorites, maybe not in the ACC.
But I could see SMU beating Miami.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
You know, you're right. Texas going into Southeast Conference, Oregon, and the Big 12, Chris. I have no idea what's going on there. I have no idea. And I'm not sure it matters which two teams make it to the championship game.
No, that's a one-bid league. And I said all along, if you were just interested in watching crazy stuff happen where you have absolutely no emotional investment, the Big 12 was the place to be. I mean, it's almost like a high-rent version of the MAC.
Well, here's the thing, too, Chris, that I think a lot of people have lost. Just that quick explanation, again, how the playoff's going to work. The four best or highest-ranked conference champions get the seeding 1 through 4. The assumption always was Big Ten and Southeast Conference 1 and 2, ACC and Big 12 3 and 4, and Group of Five team 12. Boise State is ahead of the Big 12 teams in the ranking. If things fall the way we think they will, if Boise State goes forward, Boise State will get that number 4 seeding. And the Big 12 champion will get the number 12 seeding.
Yeah, and I just think the brand of the Big 12, which was beat up coming into the season, has actually gotten worse from a perception standpoint over the course of the year. I think it is now far more likely than not that Boise will end up with one of those top 4 seeds.
Well, I think they're already ranked higher than those teams, and any chance, you know, would Colorado, great story, keep winning and winning, and that went away.
Yeah, forget it.
And so again, you have, who, by the way, another ranked team that lost to suddenly the hottest team in the Big 12 is Kansas.
Kansas and Florida, frankly, along with Minnesota, although they really took a lot of air out of their balloon losing to Rutgers, are probably the three best teams in the country in terms of just having middling records. Like, Florida and Minnesota might be the two best 6 and 5 teams in college football. And Kansas has really figured it out. I mean, they're a giant slayer.
They are, and they were the team. A lot of people thought they'd be near the top of the Big 12 when the season started.
Right.
Maybe it was partially losing Andy Kotelnicki. They had to get their offensive feet under them, determine who they were.
But all of it making Illinois' win over Kansas look better, and Penn State's win over Illinois by extension. So it was big stones weekend in the Big Ten. So James Franklin and Brett Bielema.
Did you see the ending of that Illinois game over Rutgers?
I sure did. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Nick Saban may not acknowledge we have a ranked win, but we know in our heart and on paper we got a win against a ranked opponent. Thanks to them. Thanks very much.
And just as the final thought here, Chris, when, you know, tallying up, you know, the Big Ten teams, Penn State survived against Minnesota on the road. Alabama did not survive. Ole Miss did not survive. Texas A&M did not survive. Chris, that is the end of this Southeast Conference conversation, that they need like 6 teams in the playoffs. All right, that's it for the show. Thank you, Chris, and thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.